Welcome to iHeartGeek.
And welcome to another episode of iHeartGeek. We have a testosterone-filled one today with this.
Yeah.
While we talk about a romance novel movie. We are... Guys, don't want to...
We're a bunch of big softies.
A little bit. Well, some of us are. Some of us are real men like Griffin down there. He's the real man, and the rest of us are just kind of, you know, hey. So we are discussing the movie Red and Red 2, the franchise that could have been the ultimate tentpole, but wasn't. Mm. But we'll get into that. I'm Dub, and I'm here with Skeeter, and I'm here with Griffin, and I'm here with Tyler. How y'all doing today?
Doing good.
Doing phenomenal. It's Saturday morning. I'm awake and talking about cool stuff. How can I not be better?
There you go.
Doing fantastic.
So first off, Griffin, I want to hit you first on this one. We had to do some changes, and you super volunteered to do this movie of Red, which means I'm guessing you have a huge love for it. Tell me what it is going into this before we start, you know, beating it up. What is it you love about this movie or movies?
Besides the fact that they're the only action movies my mom will sit and watch with me. And
because
and
it's a Dad romance novel. I got you.
Anytime. Yeah. my mom hates movies. The fact that she'll sit down and watch this, but besides that, I watched it when I was probably like 10. And I don't know the concept. Bruce Willis is amazing. John Malkovich, obviously Morgan Freeman in the first one. It's like you got powerhouse is right there. Yeah. So if anything else, all the story beats the problems aside, like it's a great movie, and I love watching it. I watch it at least once a year. It's so weird, like I don't plan on it, but it just happens. So
well, yeah, this is one of those just movies that are so rewatchable. So first thing I want to hit on this before we start getting into it. Now, y'all know I am a huge fan of watching movies with a different perspective. For instance, we watched Solo, and we decided Solo is a really good movie if you watch it in a different perspective of that you're watching it as a TV show and you split it up, and then it becomes a fantastic movie. I'm a huge fan of watching movies in different perspectives. Now, this one we have, what did we figure out? Four different perspectives you can watch it under?
Yeah.
So we have the straight up 80s action movie, which is incredible. We have a rom-com. And we'll get into that in a second on that one. And we have a straight up comedy. And then on top of it, we also have, this is without the graphic parts, this is a trashy romance novel.
Mm-hmm. And it's all seamlessly blended too.
It just completely. And you know, I never picked up, and I know that it was kind of a undercurrent with they have the trashy novel covers that show up and do the breaks and all that stuff. But I never watched it like that, and I kind of watched it this last time, and I'm like, I can totally see this now. This is a different mm-hmm. movie, and it's so much fun. Let's kind of go into what this movie's about. Red, retired, extremely dangerous, was originally a comic book. Now, if you just love the movie, don't read the comic book because it has nothing to do with the movie. It's a name only. Frank Moses is there, but you don't see the Malkovich character or them getting the team together, or it's just a guy that's the Punisher, only old. Not bad. It's just that's what it is. I mean, it didn't hold my interest for a comic book, so I'll get that. If somebody liked it, I'd love to hear from you. Did anybody read the comics at all?
No, I didn't.
So, I just told Griff last night. I told Griff, I was like, dude, I think I'd just like to see it, to thumb through it. You know, maybe just to kind of see the different perspective of the paper to the film.
It's worth looking at. I'm not a big fan of the art, which turned me off right away.
It sounds like they kind of did what Marvel did with Guardians. You know, it took this deep cut, this oddball, and had people perplexed on why you're even trying to make a movie of it.
Yeah, well, like, but they had,
it, you know, it turned out great.
Like, they made the comic book Cowboys versus Aliens, which wasn't even a good movie, but they made the comic to storyboard the movie. That's the only reason they made the comic book. So this is, even though they're different stories, I feel like this is definitely like, comic book movies are kind of getting big right now. Maybe we should make one there. Their other guy in the $1,000 suit, you know.
Well, it worked. I mean, hell,
it did. And this,
it's great.
Now, before we go into why this isn't the franchise that I wish it was, we'll get to that towards the end. Let's kind of talk about the movie a little bit. Let's talk about some of the characters. We have Bruce Willis, and let's just kind of sit on these for a second. Bruce Willis was, especially in the first movie, so amazing. I feel like he nailed the part. He was either right before or right after the whole Nine Yards, if you guys ever watched that movie.
Uh-huh.
Very similar characters. This one's a little bit more hardcore, but the way he played it was very... With Bruce Willis, you know what you're going to get at this point. He's not going to surprise you.
Yeah. But
what did you guys think of Frank Moses as the old guy coming in and just destroying it all?
So, in my opinion... I'm a fan of John Wick. So I'm seeing a retired version, shorter, much less hair of John Wick. Kind of like, you know, I mean, if you think about it, look at John Wick, the first one. You know, the guys come into his house and he just lays waste to everybody, much like Bruce Willis does in this one. I think Bruce Willis, as Frank Moses is spectacular. But I just think that, like, I look at his role and I'm like, oh my gosh, totally John Wick. If you think about John Wick, like looking at it, where does he go to get like his coins and his weapons? All of a sudden he's banging a hole through the floor, pulling out, you know, with a sledgehammer, pulls out his stuff. Like, I'm all, oh my gosh, this is crazy. But we get that John Wick, or we get that Frank Moses that we see from his character from the whole Nine Yards. We get this kind of die-hardy, hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, I loved it. It was awesome.
Tyler?
Oh, no. His character is a blast. I usually have a little bit of an issue showing that guy who's just so good at his job that he's unmatched, and you can put up, you know, no fight against him, and he can just, with his eyes closed, take care of you. Because that's it's almost no fun. You want to see him struggle, but I think they did it really well here because he found his limits. The younger guys are coming up, you know, and testing him, and especially that scene where he hears Carl Urban's character, you know, oh, he's the dude in the vault, like, oh, he's a tough guy, you know. Immediately goes to his office one-on-one. Like the ego kicked in and he had to find out, you know, and that's just so much fun.
Griffin, what do you think? What do you think about Frank Moses as a character?
I think as a character, he's, you know, he's everything, you know. Bruce Willis is, you know, in, you know, the 80s and in the 90s, you know, it kind of was a household name, you know, you knew, like, I wasn't there, but when watching those films and like the way that I, you know, dad brought me up watching them, it's like you go to the movies to see this person, to see this actor. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't go to see the movie, you go to see, it's like if Bruce Willis was in it,
he sold the tickets. Yeah.
It was like you go to see the Bruce Willis movie, you don't go to see that movie. And so I feel like he carries this film in that, but the other cast, you know, like John Malkovich, obviously, he's just like, there's no match. But I think Bruce Willis's character, I don't think he oversells it. And it helps from the rest of the movie where, you know, Carl Urban's character, he's trying to get him, he's trying to find him. And he's like, really, who is this guy? This guy is not that big of a deal. I can take him. Whereas, you know, they're not afraid of him. Like, in, you know, like what dad said, like John Wick, everybody's afraid of him because they know he's coming, he's going to kill everybody. But in this one, they're just like, he's the best agent we ever had. Like, he gets stuff done. So yeah. I don't know if you stand a chance. So
now that leads me to the two things I don't like about this character. I mean, everything you guys said is correct. That is why we love this character. The things I have issue with is he's like this super agent and, you know, he's been in the field. So he's, you know, he lived that James Bond life. And then he has this relationship with this girl and he's awkward. He doesn't know how to read a sign. Does she really like me? That seemed more far-fetched than him putting the bullets in the microwave or in the stove.
Well, he's living that agent lifestyle for so long. I mean, just regular socializing and dating and stuff isn't exactly part of the repertoire there.
Well, everybody, even the Malkovich character knew, you know, his way around a relationship. And yeah. I thought that was a little weird, to be honest with you. And now the other issue I have is now the way he looked in Red 2, he looked probably 15 years older. He actually looked retired. The first movie, I mean, he has his fresh Botox in, you know, his face is tight. He looks too young to be this older character. But the second movie, I think it was a better representation of what that character should have been age-wise.
I could see it.
So that's my issues with Frank Moses. Now let's talk about the female character, which was played by Mary Louise Parker.
We have to.
Yeah, this is one more of those movies that did not understand how to write a strong female character. Because she has moments that are definitely strong, like when she breaks the bed and all that other stuff. But then she just seems kind of a mindless puppy dog for Frank Moses. I just want to go on an adventure. And the age difference was really off-putting. That would be like the dad that dates his daughter's best friend in high school. That's that age difference, and it was a little creepy.
I didn't find that. I didn't think it was icky. I mean,
I thought it was much.
He looked old enough.
Well, she could drink a beer, so I think she was in her 20s at that point. I think.
The mindless puppy thing, though, I mean, you see it in the beginning of the movie. You know, he starts reading that romance novel that she's reading,
yeah,
and it's about a woman sucked into the life of a CIA agent or whatever, you know. So she's just living out her fantasy there,
yeah.
So that all kind of fell together for me.
This could be almost like, I mean, literally she's reading a romance novel, she falls asleep, she's dreaming these movies. Like
that's
where this could totally go. Like that's a fifth element this movie. So like I think we could literally say that, but look at like it's almost lazy writing in a way, because look at the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
The female character in the movie shows up at his front door and she's like, oh my God, you're Frank, blah, 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 or whatever his name was in that movie.
Yeah.
But and Amanda Pete like, was a better actress.
Oh, she was.
pulled it off a lot better because she was strong in regardless of those moments.
But this one, she wasn't like, she was his love interest.
Yeah.
He chased after her and all of a sudden shows up at her, you know, in her hallway. You know, after these conversations over the checks. So, like, it's kind of opposite role, whatever, and then blows up in his face.
Yeah. So do we want to talk about her anymore? Because I think she is the weakest part of the movie. Got anything to say about that, Griffin?
Yeah, I'll say that if she serves any purpose to be the wild card here. I think that she's a great motivator for Bruce Willis's character. If anything, I think that it reinforces his character in the struggles. It might not be good per se. Cause I do agree with you guys when it comes to that, but if anything, they have anything, it is that. Yeah.
Okay,
I have to say, she does drive one of the greatest scenes in the movie, and that is when Urban gets her.
Yeah,
they capture her and she's being interrogated, And then he gets the call from Frank, and Frank's sitting in his living room, and he's like, I will take everything you love from you.
That was an amazing scene.
Like,
not because of her, yeah.
Yeah, because the tables were completely turned, he was like, okay, you whoop me in my office, now you're going to do this? Like, okay, you're real.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop playing this game with you.
She's the puppy from John Wick.
That's dark.
Done. That's it.
Okay. So quick backseat or Monday, what are we going to call this? Monday morning screenwriting. What I think would have really worked well with this character is if you take the Helen Mirren character, don't make her, but you can give those aspects to the girl. I think that we have a lot better movie, and I think we have a super action movie at that point. Because I think Helen Mirren was incredible in this movie. Oh, she was absolutely Everything that I wanted her to be.
She was just that ditzy love interest.
Helen Mirren could have stood alone. Stood
she needs her own movie in this, yeah.
Kind of along the same lines of a character, but like we get this young version of Helen Mirren in Sarah. Like, yeah. You know, all of a sudden she turns out to be this freaking, you know, Lady Jane, G.I. Joe. I'm not saying anything that Bruce Willis may play the same character
in every G.I. movie,
Joe, with a different name. Just saying, but
that's fair. Okay. Now let's talk Carl Urban. Can he play anything in any movie and make it better?
I will watch it. Yep.
Oh my gosh. And this is on this rewatch that I had. I forgot how good he was.
The only struggle that I had was in the very beginning of the movie, and Griff and I talked about this last night when we were watching it, was he really, really struggles with pulling off the American, the English accent with his, because he's Aussie. So when you could really tell that he's fighting that long A and U, but he pulls it off really well. Like, and if that's the only thing that I pulled from it, like, yeah. Dude is a beast in whatever he plays, from Star Trek to Lord of the Rings. Like, he's even Dread, which was a horrible movie.
Yeah.
He pulled it off like a beast.
Now, what I'm loving about his character, not his acting, but his character, is the way that they gave him a complete turn from the bad guy to the good guy without changing his moral compass at all. He still believed the same things he believed. He didn't turn his back on his country. He was,
yeah.
You know, he made a complete turn without changing anything about him. And that's gifted screenwriting right there. I don't know if anybody else picked up on that. That is tough to do.
It was almost like in this movie, they started writing pre-coffee and cocaine or whatever they do in that world.
In the writer's room. Yeah, we got you.
Right. So before the mountains of cocaine and coffee showed up, they were like, let's just write the whole nine yards over again.
Then Demi left. Oh, John yes. Wick.
And then Demi left. Everybody was like, boom. And they were like, bam, let's write the baddest movie we ever saw. And that's what happened. They're like, what just happened? And that's this movie in a nutshell.
There's some Tarantino aspects to this because, you know, like Pulp Fiction, how they just kind of put the stories in wherever, another same character. They put the stories wherever they fit, and they did that with the scenes. And that's why, like what I was talking about earlier with the different perspectives, that's why they all work together, because it's a bunch of movies put together with one storyline.
Mm-hmm. So is it me or – so we had the first scene with the – bullets in the frying pan, the whole bit there, you mm-hmm. know, and then they just freaking Swiss cheese this whole house, which was cool, mind you.
That was a great scene. I'm not gonna
lie. The heck were the cops in, like, he must live out of town because there was nobody there.
But apparently this stuff goes on a lot around his town.
But it's the CIA. Don't you think that they can probably say, stay out of the neighborhood or we will destroy you?
That 911 system would be inundated with phone calls.
Yeah, and they're probably like, yeah, we know. It's cool. Don't worry about it. But, like, I mean, I know a dude that drives a security truck in Las Vegas that would probably be there quicker than those cops. But, like, did anybody else see, like, this was my favorite part that really kicked off the action sequence for the rest of the movie. The door opening, car sliding sideways, Bruce Willis stepping out.
I love that scene. I love it. Don't ruin it. Yeah.
No, that lit the entire action of the whole rest of the movie.
Like, it was so 80s.
And then Red 2, it's in reverse. He gets into the car.
So awesome. Now, I'm going to blow your guys' mind for a second. Did you know that Red 3 was not only in planning, it was made and nobody saw it? It's been out since 2016. I just read it in IMDb. I'm like, really? I never even heard of it.
I knew they were making it or planned on making it. I didn't know it was out.
2016, it's been out.
Did they get Bruce Willis and everybody?
Yes, Bruce Willis is in it. Oh, yeah, check out your IMDb page. And go to suggestions, like, what?
Yeah, NBC was supposed to make a series too. I don't know what happened to that.
Now that
said anything about that,
I would be down with, because that way you could do the comic book, because you can have story arcs on everybody individually, and that's what I think this movie was missing. It was too much Frank Moses, even though we had these super interesting other characters.
I didn't feel like he overshadowed everybody, though.
No, I mean, I don't think he overshadowed, but I wanted to see more of the other guys, because they're so good.
Absolutely.
So, speaking of another brilliant one, we got Morgan Freeman. Oh. Very interesting concept that you think he dies in the beginning and then he doesn't, spoiler. And then he dies at the end. But right at the beginning of the movie, he tells you, I'm dying right now. I have cancer, stage 4 cancer. I got, you know, I'm this world.
He was a red shirt.
But the way they did that, that's an interesting choice, because you know that from the get-go that he's going to sacrifice himself because he's going to die. Mm-hmm. But that it didn't take away from the character. I mean, and Morgan Freeman, I mean, he could play a rock in the school play, and I believe the rock more than I believe anybody else.
Right.
So what do you guys think about the placement of the Morgan Freeman character? And I wish they wouldn't have killed him, because I would have liked to have seen him in the other movie.
Oh, he's fabulous.
Yeah.
The dirty old man in the
dirty old man, yes.
But I think that the fact that he was, you know, terminal, it made him more lethal.
Yeah, it did.
Because he knew, you know, a guy who's going to die is more dangerous than a guy who
had more gravity when he talked because of that.
Absolutely. His threats meant something.
Yeah.
And you knew he wasn't dead when they didn't show him.
Yeah.
They could have convinced me a little more, but his character was so fun. And his Morgan Freeman, man,
Morgan to Freeman, see him in a role like
that, you know, you go from Shawshank and, you know, the countless other roles where he's more sappy and everything, and then you see him doing this, threatening people's lives and handling business. It's so good.
So Griffin, as a student of film, tell us what you think about the Freeman performance and the writing for it.
I think it is great. It's so cool because he there's something I didn't notice all the other times I watched it is that he is like old. He can't like run like Bruce Willis or like when in all those scenes where they're like running away from the RPGs and all those people attacking him at the shipment yard and stuff like that. I think that they played it very well. And he explains it, you know, like you guys brought up, he's like, I'm 80 years old. I got stage 4 lung cancer. He's like, I'm just going, you know, so, or I think it was lung cancer. I'm not sure. I think that they wrote him in very well, and he served the purpose. And especially in his final moments where he's just like looking, he's like, someone's got to make the hard choice, kid. You know, like it's just, and they look at each other. There was no question. It was just like, okay. You know, so it was really cool.
he didn't think much of Frank Moses first time he saw him. Sorry, he couldn't help that. And I'm glad they didn't. Yes, he was sick, and you know because he said it. And I'm glad, but I'm glad they didn't have him play sick. He wasn't coughing, and you didn't have.
Right.
How do I say it? You didn't have sympathy for him? You know he's gonna die, but it's not like, oh, I feel so bad. He's coughing. He's, you know, and he could have very easily made that the focal point, but he said, "I'm sick. I'm dying. I'm gonna live the rest of my life however I'm gonna live it." And I like that a lot better than playing sick, if that makes sense.
He was a badass that is just waiting for a key moment.
Yeah.
To go ahead and sacrifice himself.
Yeah. Okay, so two more characters I want to talk about. John Malkovich. Oh,
now, amazing.
John Malkovich is the guy that does the conspiracy theories that are like way, 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 way off to the left or right or whatever. And eventually it comes out that, yeah, he was right. Every one of his theories are right. just so good.
Absolutely. That's the one of the best roles I've seen him play, I think. With the eyes and just the mannerisms and, oh, so good. So fun to watch.
Yeah, he actually, you know, I mean, this kind of guy does exist if you've been in the military long enough.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know. Yeah, so good. Which, I'll talk about my favorite scene after. Skeeter, what did you think of the Malkovich character?
From the get-go with the crossbow, you know, when they're walking away and he goes, let's go to the house and talk about it. Sarah's like, the house is back there. And he's like, that's the decoy. And they walk down the
57 Chevy. Yeah.
The 57 Chevy through the stairs. And you're just like, what? And then he goes into that vault and opens the vault and is like, let me get the file on whatever.
It's a piece of paper. Yeah.
Like, it's paper. You're like, what the heck is in there? You're thinking, oh, this dude's going to go in there and rock some computer craziness. And it's paper. And from that point, when he goes, I finally get to get the pig. And like,
and you know something's going to happen with this pig.
Dude, it's on. The rest of the movie, his character, you like, he sucks you in. And even if it was a horrible movie, Malkovich being Malkovich through this whole movie keeps you there. Like, yeah. He keeps you in your seat going, what is this dude going to do next?
Yeah.
You know, the lady at the airport with the rental car thing, yeah. That whole, oh my gosh.
We'll get into that one in just a sec because I want to talk about that scene in specific. But I think we can all agree in a field of just monster good actors, he stole the show. He was the best. Yep. He was definitely the most valuable player.
Look at his entrance. Yeah. Go blaring out of the freaking bushes there.
He was the only one that I think was written right 100% of the way through. The other guys did, there's some hiccups here and there. His character from the start to the end was written perfectly, I think. What, Griffin? You got that look. You got something to say on that?
I'm just thinking about it. Frank, you can't trust the system. Satellites. Cell phones. he's just great.
Yeah, he's the most memorable character in these movies. Period. I honestly, I don't remember the girl's name. I remember him. I remember everything about him. On the rewatch, I'd forgotten the Richard Dreyfuss character. I didn't forget about him. You know, it's just one of those, just so memorable and so good. Before we go on to Dreyfuss, I want to talk about the scene, which is, I have two favorite scenes in this movie. One is the car scene that we already discussed. And the second one was the 50 cal versus the missile launcher. And that scene,
epic.
When you watch it and he shoots the rocket and it actually shoots the lady from behind and she goes flying out 100 feet. And it is like, oh my gosh, whoever choreographed this is freaking a genius. I don't know what it is about that scene and the pig thing, because it's got the anticipation for the whole time. It's like, so is he, and you start thinking, okay, is he just crazy enough that he has to have his pet? And then
that's what I thought at first. Out. Yeah.
Skeeter.
Okay. So A, the hand grenade with the stock of the
the baseball bat
grenade launcher.
Yes.
And blows that dude to kingdom come. Everything about that scene particularly was great.
Hyper unrealistic, but awesome. Yeah.
Super unrealistic. I feel like not a single person, CIA trained or not, other than the main cast of this movie, could hit the broadside of a barn with a stinking softball, shooting an automatic weapon.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else picked that up. But
Stormtroopers, it's okay.
Like, one of my other favorite characters, and I don't know if we're going to talk about him, because I know we're going to talk about Dreyfus, but Brian Cox.
Oh, like, yes. I'm sorry.
This dude is Scottish. He's our favorite, commanding officer from
Super Troopers.
Like, oh my gosh, this dude rocks the Russian, the mother Russia. Like, drink to my cousin, you know? And then he's like, he's not dead. Like, he's showing you Russian. Like, but I just feel like this dude, he's another huge part of this movie that keeps you in your seat. And I love him. Like, his whole love interest, like, you have two love interests in the movie.
Yes.
Like, him.
And theirs was more interesting.
It kind of was.
By far. Uh-huh.
By far. When he keeps calling her, did he call her a rabbit?
Bunny.
Like, bunny. Like, dude, just amazing. Like, this movie, like I said, coffee and cocaine really turned this movie around. I
fully believe that. No, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't actually mention the Brian Cox. He was so good. Mm-hmm. It just felt, he's another one of those that he, again, you kind of forget about him because he does his job so well. But I don't think this movie would be as good without him. I don't think anybody else could have played that role. And it's kind of a nothing role that he made into something.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always have huge amounts of respect for that.
Like you said, their love story was more interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad they added to that in the second one.
Yes.
In this whole series, they pulled huge, huge talent. I mean, in two? Who did they pull in two? Academy Award winning actor freaking Anthony Hopkins. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Who was another fantastic character.
Played that so well.
Yeah. Let's talk Richard Dreyfuss. Now, I've met Mr. Dreyfuss on about five different occasions, and the smarmy character that he is, he's not acting. He just said, hey, Richard, just say these lines however you'd say them. Okay. Mm-hmm. In my experiences with him, I've met him a few times, so usually I don't say it because people have bad days, and I never usually say it when someone doesn't treat security the best. He was interesting. but with that being said, this is when you remember how funny Dreyfuss is, how good he is at playing a weasel. I mean, he was, you know, that scene in Mr. Holland's Opus when he's getting ready to cheat with one of his students? That's who this character is. And it's just,
there you go.
Yeah.
He literally plays this character in The American President. If you've ever seen that movie, it's, I don't even remember. I'm drawing a blank, but The American President, older movie, mid 90s, one of my wife and I's favorites, but Richard Dreyfuss plays a senator who is becoming to run for president. He's the Republican. He's the, you know, he's the guy, but that character, literally snarky, kind of pompous a little bit, is the same dude. Like, you could tell something's going on. Like, he's got a dirty past, but you don't really want to say anything. But yeah, totally. I loved his character.
Yeah, just really, I believed him.
Yeah.
Personal things aside, he is a phenomenal actor. You know, there's a reason why he's has the career he has had.
You shot me. You shot me. Really, dude?
and you don't care. She's like, what a jerk. Okay, so now what I want to kind of talk about a little bit. Now, this movie, I think we can... I will say that it is 20 times better than The Expendables. This could have been the franchise that The Expendables was. And then we get to the second movie, and while it's good, and some would argue better than the first movie, I think they changed too much. As far as visually, it doesn't look like the same movie. With sequels, I want the story to be different, but I don't want it visual. I want it visually to look the same. I want to be in the same universe. All the fonts change, and that's a big one for me when they change fonts in between movies. The way they did the transitions, it was just too different. And I think that's honestly what stopped this movie from being we shouldn't be talking about Expendables. We should be talking about Red and Red 1 through 6. Because right. They could have brought in the same actors in these movies. Because Expendables to me was just a bad knockoff of Red. What do you guys think about why didn't it become... It's almost a cult movie in comparison to, you know, what it should have been. Why do you guys think it is? Griffin. I would start with Griffin on that one first.
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, like you said, it got made, obviously. We had no idea. We were talking about it last night, you know. The one thing about the business is that it's a business. Maybe the second one wasn't received as well as the first one. And they probably just, you know, decided to can it maybe, but I mean, it seems like they made it. Who knows how far in post they got, but probably a lot of studio interference. It's Summit, I think, did the films,
which is a minor league in comparison to.
Yeah, I mean, the Expendables, though. I watched the first one with Dad when I was like 11, 12, and it didn't do anything for me. I think I didn't watch any other ones, and I think they're not that good of movies.
I don't enjoy them at all.
I think Stallone called up Arnold and was like, hey, you want to help me produce this movie? Because no one wanted to fund it.
Yeah.
I think it was just a big name. I don't know. I don't care for them, and I probably won't watch them again unless we do a podcast on them. but the Reds, we watch like once every year.
Yeah.
Unintentionally.
It's so weird. Tyler, what do you think?
I think part of it had to do with the, you know, the storyline, the love story that Bruce Willis and his little lady had. I mean, what do? You know,
it's
you
not keep, believable.
You keep pushing her along as somebody who's like, oh, where are we going next? What are we doing next?
Or she's a puppy.
Or do you suddenly, now she's suddenly good at being an agent and can help out? You know what I mean? I don't think you could have taken that too far. So they might have wrote themselves in a corner there, maybe. But then again, you could have concentrated more on the other characters too. So
yeah.
I haven't seen the third one, so I don't know.
No, apparently nobody has, because I say we all love this movie and we had no idea. I was looking for it because I'm like, oh, is it going to be? Are they ever going to make the third one? And then I just saw that, I'm like, oh,
right.
And I can't find it on iTunes. I can't find it anywhere.
I'd like to see. I want to cut in real quick. I think that they could have done, like you guys just said, that's a good point. They could have turned it into a franchise if they would have kept the same characters. So keep, you know, Bruce Willis's character, even his lady. But for the third one, they could have put them off to the side and made it about Malkovich. They could have, he could have focused on him with something that happened with him.
And done an origin story on him.
Yeah. Or something, you know, and have like flashbacks and the plot be about someone trying to come after Malkovich, and he goes to Bruce and his lady and be like, yeah, someone's after me. And they're like, okay, well, we'll help you. But they're not the main characters anymore. And they get all the same characters. So that would be really good.
Yeah. And I want to say this, if anybody is friends with anybody that was involved with anybody in production for Red, I would love to talk to them about what happened. We're not going to grill or anything else because obviously we love the movie, but I want to know what happened because it deserved so much better. Skeeter, what about you? What do you think?
So, I mean, you mentioned thinking Expendables. So this was an action movie for action movie actors. It wasn't a action movie for people to go see, even though people did see it. It was for those people who love Schwarzenegger, who love Stallone, and all the different guys. Red, as soon as they added the comic book genre to it, mm-hmm. I feel like that's when the world changed. Like, that's when everything changed for this movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was a comic book movie. When did the second one come out? Like, think about the whole timeline. You know, comic book movies, for comic book movies, unless they were an actual one of these guys,
yeah,
you know, or even Red Hood back here behind me, they were got kind of pushed to the back shelf.
Yeah.
You know, and that's we could have done a different thing. Like, I would have loved an origin story with Malkovich's character.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, let's go right before the LSD incident and walk into that. Let's see Guatemala. Let's see
what happened.
About, because they talk about stories the entire time.
And I tell you what they could actually do, what they could do a whole season like this. They could actually all be sitting around it. You, the episode one, and you do 10 episodes. They're sitting around drinking at a bar or a restaurant or something. Just these guys, for some reason, they're at a funeral or something. You don't know who died. Cool. We can do that. So they're sitting around literally telling stories, and then they just do a flashback. They're going to tell one story a week. This is what happened here. And then you have a new cast. You have the old cast still there that we love that aren't going to have to work a lot. Then you have a new cast that comes in as the younger them and does it. I am in 100% for this movie. I think this is, or this TV show. This is more interesting than, and I say, and I can't fault the movies because I think they're great, but I think that maybe it's the marketing. They just disappeared. Even Red 2, I had to search it out. I don't remember it being in your face. Cause that was the days that you'd watch the previews and wait for the next movie to come out. And it just, I don't remember it being there. So I don't know. It could be a lot of things kind of. No. Okay.
Studio. I think it's all business stuff. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Money, viewers, how many people watch it, who are interested, the actors, you know, it's a lot of business. That's what drew me away from wanting to be a part of the business.
Yeah. Do you have something, Skeeter? You look like you're about to say something.
Trying to figure out internet.
Okay. So let me ask you guys this. What is it about this movie? What elements just completely work? We've talked about what doesn't work. Okay. Let's stay off of that, cause we figured it out. Three, two. So what I want to talk about now is what did work. What elements did you love about these movies? We've gotten all the negative out. Let's talk about what did you love about these movies in general. Tyler, let's start with you.
Just the seamless blending of, you know, the fun rom-com with the amazing action.
Yeah.
The action is stellar. I mean, hell, even Expendables and stuff is like big budget, you know, scenes and stuff. Still, I don't think held a candle to some of the sequences in this movie, you know? So yeah. It was just, and being able to blend all that and the comedy, it was really, really fun time. And the rewatchability is definitely there. And
yeah,
watching this cast do what they do best. You know, I really need to see that third one now.
Skeeter, give me what you think real quick, because we're going to have to wrap up pretty quick. But
I think, like Tyler said, the action, some of the comedy stuff, Malkovich kept me hooked and made me want to come back and see Red 2. I mean, yeah. what was this guy going to do? What craziness was he going to bring to the screen? And just the stories, I loved it. I felt like this, the different stories that happened inside with the different actors. I mean, just awesome. I loved it. It was a great movie.
Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the show we've been talking about the differences between, you know, this movie and the other ones. I'd like to kind of bring it full circle. I mean, it, you know, you have, you know, Bruce Willis's, I forgot her, Sarah. So Sarah, we never talked about It's Us all these times in the movie.
Yeah, that's good.
All actually. These times in the movie, if she serves any purpose, it is that. She is the audience, because they'll go to torture someone and she's like, are you going to do that? We're doing this right now. Okay. And then they're like, yeah, it's normal. Stop. That's how we do things. They say it a lot. This is how we do things, you know? So, but I feel like what separates it is that it's trying, like you're watching this action movie
mm-hmm.
and then it flips on you. It turns into this romance novel. It turns into this comedy. It turns into this, all right, we're serious. You have Bruce Willis, and then John Malkovich comes out and he just totally breaks it. He breaks the genre. It's a genre breaking film. And I think that's what makes it stand out.
Yeah.
That's really good. Now, I want to mention one thing that we haven't talked about at all, real quick. And that is the way they did the instrumentation, the soundtrack, if you will. Because, I mean, they only had like one rock song on there. And I don't even remember what it was, but I liked how, depending on which perspective you were going off of, if you're on rom-com, the music was really rom-com with the xylophone sounding thing. On the action stuff, it was 80s metal. I thought it was great how they really did read the scene and they didn't give it one, you know, stamp. They were something different. I really enjoyed that. And that's something that a lot, because they want to have a theme in most music, in most movies. And I get that, but this one should not have had one. They did a great job at that.
And you saw that amped up a little more in the second one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. I hope that they can refresh this with the same characters somehow. But it's the only way it works is a TV show. And that way you have the smaller stories. I think it needs to be a little more contained.
That seems to be the formula these days.
Yeah, well,
let's getting a TV show.
Fingers crossed, but it won't go on Disney Plus.
Right.
I think it was Image Comics. I'm not sure, and they don't have a contract with anybody. So,
if anything, it'll probably end up on Prime or something.
Fingers crossed. Yep. That's the same with because they did Invincible, so that can work.
Well, Image must be owned by DC then.
Right? No, it's creator. It's creator owned.
Oh, okay.
That the Kirkman.
I did see when I opened up looking for it on Roku, it was on every Showtime streaming service. Okay. So possible there, maybe definitely Prime, because they're mixed in with everybody. So I would think that's where it would be.
So we're definitely going to keep our fingers crossed that maybe we can get what this movie deserves.
Yeah.
We're saying this not because we didn't like it, but because we did. And I think that's an important conclusion to draw on this. I'm going to have to wrap us up because I got something I got to do. So with that being said, go to our website, www.iheartgeekshow.com. Use the code we paid extra for it. You can buy cool t-shirts like this. And you can see Tyler's t-shirt. We got a bunch of them in. We got girl shirts. We got tank tops. We got V-necks. We got fitted, blah, blah. Check it out if you like that sort of thing. Check out our Patreon. We're going through every Marvel movie in chronological order, and we are having a blast. I don't know. Let's see. I think you're Captain Marvel or Miss Marvel. I think we are on. I forgot which one we're going to be on this week. So check it out. If you it's the Patreon, we really hope it's worth your time. You get a ton of extra content, and we appreciate it. It helps keep the show running. Like us. Comment on our stuff, share us. It helps us out a lot. If you're listening to us on the audio, go to your podcatcher and please give us 5 stars and give us a review. Again, gets us in front of more eyes, and we appreciate it, guys. So until next time, I'm Dub. I'm here with Skeeter. I'm here with Griffin. I'm here with Tyler. Keep on geeking on, guys.
You have been listening to the latest episode of the iHeart Geek Show. Make sure you visit our website at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you check us out on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And keep on geeking on to all of you geek rock stars.